Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Each year, Jesus' parents went up to Jerusalem for the Feast of Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to festival custom. After they had completed its days, as they were returning, the boy Jesus remained behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. Thinking that he was in the caravan, they journeyed for a day and looked for him among their relatives and acquaintances, but not finding him, they returned to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple area, sitting in the midst of the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were astounded at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you done this to us? Your father and I have been looking for you with great anxiety." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them, and he went down with them to Nazareth and was obedient to them. And his mother kept all of these things in her heart and pondered on them. And Jesus advanced in wisdom and age and favor before God and man. The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning. You all doing okay? We sound a little kind of in low energy. Are you okay? You sure we're all right? You made it through the Christmas event and did okay? Good. I'm glad it's over. Oh, some. Yeah. Hey, with all of that intensity and pressure, we like to kind of move on and adapt like we talked about at Christmas. The celebration, it takes a lot, it requires a lot, and yet it's a little microcosm of our lives. How we deal with that event, that special event, and all of the challenges, a lot of insight into our everyday lives as well. What about that first reading from the book of Samuel? Did you get it? Hannah, having her baby, she had prayed to the Lord for a child. She's beyond childbearing years, and she is given a child. And her husband's going up with the entourage to celebrate in the temple. She said, "No, I'm not going to go." She said, "I'm going to go later when the child is weaned, and I'm going to bring him up and present him to the Lord." And sure enough, that's what she does. You know, she brings him up to the temple, they offer the sacrifice, and she presents Samuel to the priest and says, "Hey, we're dedicating him to the Lord. He's all yours." It's amazing. I mean, she didn't even wait for him to become a teenager, right? I mean, it's understandable if, you know, a teenager or something. Hey, why don't you all take care of him, right? Man, we've tried. We've done our stuff. But hey, presenting him when he's weaned, that's quite a challenge. Interesting perspective. She had prayed for the child. Now she is dedicating the child to the Lord. How important is that in our journey? Many people pray ahead of time for the children that they will have. I encourage couples all of the time in marriage preparation, hey, write your own prayer for the day of your marriage. Many of them do. And then when you've completed it, hey, do a little calligraphy or do it up nicely. Place it in your home. And when your kids are teenagers, you can bring them out and say, "Look at this prayer. Hey, we prayed for you when we were married. Now you need to be a little cooperative with us, you know? See, it's written in there from the outset." Hey, it's part of the challenges. What a special feast we celebrate today. Feast of the Most Holy Family, probably a greatly misunderstood concept in our church. Because so often it's been used to berate people and say, well, you should be like them and all of the other varieties of that. But the Feast of the Holy Family, coming just on the heels of the birth of the Christ, it's a very special feast because we really have a great deal to learn from them. A study of these people is really valuable. How they responded. The feast is an invitation to all of us to take a special look at this family in terms of how they set out to be responsive to God's invitation in their lives. It's so easy for all of us to dismiss the Holy Family and say, well, oh no, we could never be like them. We may not even want to be like them. Because they had some kind of a hotline to God because it was God's son. It's easy for us to dismiss that, but we would be terribly wrong. Every child is a child of God's, his own son included. Everyone. Not a single one that isn't. And that's why it's such an important message to us. And the beliefs that we hold on to, that they had some kind of a hotline to God because it was their son Jesus, well, they didn't have any different hotline than you and I do. It's really important to know that. Otherwise, we deny their humanity and we deny the humanity of Christ. They had all of the, look at them carefully, the family. They had all of these struggles and all of the challenges of any contemporary family in our world. It started with an unplanned pregnancy. What is that like when it visits the family system? All of the anxiety that it generates. An unplanned pregnancy. And then Joseph, the husband, deciding to divorce her quietly, and such was his intention, it says, when all of a sudden the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream. Do you have dreams like that? You probably do. When I was growing up, my grandfather used to say, in the summertime particularly, when my grandparents kind of took care of us, down at the beach, you know, my dad was happy for us to go, and we were happy to go, and it was a great arrangement, and my grandparents would be there with us for 2.5 months. And my grandfather, when we'd wake up in the morning, what did you dream about? What were your dreams? Tell me your dream, and he'd start giving a little interpretation of it. He always believed in them. Dreams are extremely valuable. I mean, look at your dreams. What do they teach you? They are absolutely teachable moments. A great author, John Sandifer, says, our dreams are the unresolved portions of our lives, seeking naturally to resolve themselves as we rest. What a beautiful perspective. The unresolved portions, the pieces that are a little out of order, out of balance maybe, and they're seeking naturally to resolve themselves as we rest. The psalmist says, whether we are awake or asleep, the Lord speaks to us. Hey, Joseph was a pretty amazing individual. How did he know and how did he hear that? Don't be afraid to take Mary as your wife. Take her into your home. The child that she has conceived is by the power of the Holy Spirit. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Do you trust your dreams when you experience them? Hey, I could never create in daylight the wonderful experiences that my dreams bring. You know, the little stream flowing by and the light in the house and lights are off in two of the rooms and the flowers and the fish and the little kids running. Could never create it. I could sit in my office and I couldn't create that kind of detail by day. Surely he speaks to us. He was speaking to Joseph, and Joseph generated that confidence and hope coming out of that. He accepts Mary into his home, and what happens? Hey, more challenges. More challenges on the horizon because of, hey, the darn census, the government. They wanted their little action too. And so now everybody has got to go to their hometown to be registered. Wow, what a sense of commotion and action. People going cross-country to register in their own home places. What a difficult journey for the pair, for Joseph and Mary and she with child, on a donkey and making their way across the hills and going to his hometown in Bethlehem. Not an easy journey. And then they get there. There's no room for them in the inn. They had plans made. They didn't have a motor home, you know. So, hey, what do they do? No room in the inn. And maybe with the help of somebody, they were directed, hey, there's a spot there where you can lay your head, a stable. Do you not think they might have been saying, God, give us a break? Really? I mean, like, hey, we're doing what you want us to do. We're following your plan. Man, it doesn't look too great. It's not very attractive. Surely they were saying, hey, and yet Mary was calm through it all. Hey, this is where I'm going to birth my child. I don't know how it all fits together, but I'm trusting him. And so the child is born in a stable. After the birth, more anxiety. Fear for the life of their child. What's it like when your child is newborn infant and you have this worry and anxiety about their life? Doctors come in after the birth and they say, I'm sorry to tell you, but we've got to go through this emergency surgery. It's imperative. We've got to take your child into surgery, and the challenges and the risks are, can you imagine the anxiety for the family? And yet, it's the only thing to do. And so the fear for the life of their child, the fear for the life of their child when something is diagnosed early on. Are they going to be okay? What are we going to do? The child has a handicap. What are we going to do? And yet people find extraordinary grace and power and blessings in those realities every single day of the year. Through acceptance. And then following that, the birthing, Joseph, another one of these dreams, don't you know? Man, hey, get up and go and take your wife and the child and head for where? Egypt. How interesting. How interesting. What a place to land. Was it because it was a celebration of all of the Hebrew scriptures, the Old Testament experience? That while God brought his people out of slavery there, now the newborn one was going to bring them out of there into freedom. That the Christ child was going to be the source of freedom for all of his people. Was it a little nuance in there, just letting us know? How appropriate, the new Exodus, Jesus freeing his people from all of their sin. There were many more issues that required patience and active listening on the part of Mary and Joseph. And St. Luke puts it so beautifully in the gospel passage. Mary kept all of these things in her heart and pondered on them. Pondered on them. What a great thought. And then we have the teenage crisis, right? Well, he was 12. He thought he was a teenager, right? Isn't that the way it goes with 12-year-olds? Hey, I'm a teenager. Well, not quite, but teenage crisis. They go up to celebrate the great festival, the ritual, and the practice of their faith, the Jewish tradition, Passover, celebrating God bringing his people to freedom. Great days in Jerusalem, gathering at the temple and celebrating for a number of days. And where they came from, down in Ein Karim in the south, it was customary for all of the people to come in a kind of a caravan and an entourage with all of the relatives and friends and the neighbors and everybody making their way to Jerusalem because they love to go there for the festivals. And they arrive there and have the celebration, and then they're heading home and they realize it takes them a while to realize. And we say, oh God, they weren't very good parents. Hey, they were great parents. Great parents. Hey, even a child disappears sometimes. Hey, you're in Walmart. Where's my child? And then an announcement comes over. Hey. And you're all embarrassed and you say, oh no, man, everybody's going to be looking at me and saying, man, I'm not a good parent. You're a great parent. Hey, when they're 12 years old, they're trying to get away, right? Sure. Because it's part of the natural process and progression. And from there on, you know, for the next 7, 8 years, hey, that's what they're doing, trying to get away, trying to find themselves, trying to have that independence. And they arrive after these days, you know. Hey, it's a shocking experience when you find your child is missing. They search among the relatives, hey, thinking that he's in the entourage, playing with his peers, and they're all moving along in this caravan. And then they say, we better go back and check it out. And they go there, and they find him in the temple. Is there something wrong with you? No, nothing wrong. And Mary says, hey, son, why did you do this to us? Hey, isn't that the first kind of struggle of parenting? Why did you do this to us, son? The prevailing question, or daughter, right? Why did you do it to us? Did you not know that your father and I were really anxious and worried about you? And what is his answer? Why were you looking for me? Why were you looking for me? And then he says, did you not know that I had to be in my father's house? Well, no, we really didn't. Man, a lot of folks don't know. It's a really good thing for kids to be in our father's house. It's an important little detail. They brought him there. They were training him and preparing him in that practice. It's important. It's really important if we want them to be people of faith. But they did not understand his answer. Can you imagine your son coming home, or you coming and finding him up here at church, and he says, why were you looking for me? Well, guess why? Hey, to straighten you out, or, you know, whatever. And then he says, well, didn't you know I had to be about my father's business? And as parents, you say, oh, well, that's beautiful. We love that. But we're not worried about that. We're really worried about your business. You know, that's the thing that gives us anxiety. Counting on you. It's a struggle. They had all of those struggles. Mary and Joseph's wisdom and awareness in the midst of all of these challenges was particularly significant. We learn a lot from it. That's what made them really holy, that they were reflective. Reflective. They took it inside. They didn't just jump and react at. There's no recounting of them scolding him or any of that. They were trying to figure out what was going on in this kid's mind and heart. It's a very important and valuable teaching. We live in a world where there's very little reflection. Very little reflection. We live in a world that is reactive. We are constantly jumping. All you got to do is turn on your television, man. Talking heads, they have absolutely zero interest in what the other person has to say. It's a kind of a little reflection of our world. We don't have a great deal of interest in the other because we don't operate out of a reflective reality, a reflective sense or experience of life. Can you imagine how different our world would be if we were reflective? That's what made the difference for them. In fact, I would go so far as to say that's what makes the difference between being holy and not so holy. Reflectiveness. That I'm able to take in and process some of the stuff. And it's not just my immediate response or reaction. Imagine if we became more reflective in our world and less reactive. Imagine the difference it would produce. Promise you that. Absolute truth. This is the ultimate difference. Being reflective, we're all called to be holy. We're all called to holiness. And being reflective is the key to real holiness. Connecting the loose ends in our lives. The only way we can do it is by being reflective. If we never go back and visit an event, or if we go through something that is a crisis and then just blow it off and keep on trucking, what have we learned? Probably nothing. Mary kept all of these things and reflected on them. What are the things that you reflect on? And the reflective experience is what St. Paul writes about in his letter to the Romans. Everything, not just some, everything comes together for good for those that love God. Now, there's a woman that believed that. Despite all of the challenges and the ups and downs, everything, not some, everything, was fitting into the plan of God as was unfolding in her life. That takes a lot of trust, a lot of faith. And my prayer is that throughout this new year, we would work on being holy, being reflective, trusting that the many and varied events in our lives will come together for good because we love him and because he loves us. It's a great invitation. Looking at the Holy Family is a powerful teaching. They had no hotline or no quick access or no dial it up or anything else, no video conferences. They were just working same way as you and I are to try and see things come together. And it's only afterwards that we really find the meaning and the value. If we are unreflective, we may never find that meaning. Looking at the portrait, powerful portrait, one-line portrait of her whole experience and her whole life couldn't be summarized any better. St. Luke says, Mary kept all of these things in her heart and pondered on them. What does it mean to do that? Can we do that? Rather than being reactive to everything, can we take these things in our heart and ponder on them? And my prayer is, hey, as we begin and stand on the threshold of a new year, may we be quick to keep many things in our hearts and ponder on them. May we be reflective. That's our relationship with him.